I'm Alex Hirsch, the creator of Gravity Falls.
I'm Jeff Rowe, writer on Gravity Falls.
I'm Shion Takeuchi, and I just hung out during the writing of this episode.
I'm Rob Brunzetti. I'm the supervising producer of Gravity Falls.
Blendin's game. This is one of the hardest episodes of this season. When you watch it, it's like it's fun, it's cool, but like this is one of these episodes where I was often given the writer's room certain challenges, and this one was, yeah, let's get back Blendin, and let's also make it about like laser tag, because that's fun, and let's also make it about Seuss, and also go to the past, and also go to the future. All right, peace out, figure it out. And it was the hardest thing in the world to do.
Jeff, would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Jeff was the writer of this episode. Can you talk a little bit about the specific, unique challenges of a story like this?
It broke my soul. There's a jar of tears hidden in the Disney TVA building.
It's in a glass case now.
Spotlight on it. Writer's tears. It was really challenging because I think we, Alex, like we had an idea for this episode and what we were going to do. And then we were trying to do this like intense emotional thing with it too, like balance this really light, fun, kind of exciting episode against the tragedy of Seuss's backstory and his father. And it's hard to marry those things and kind of like thread that.
To find the middle ground. I remember there was a draft that Mike Rianda read, and like there was a scene where like little Seuss is waiting on the curb for his dad, and he was like, "You cannot put this scene on television. This is the saddest thing. This is so depressing it crosses the nexus from like heartbreaking to like this is violence this against
is,
the audience.
Yeah, this is damaging. Yeah. This is damaging.
Breaking the show.
But also, it's like a fun episode about like wacky time babies.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this is a great episode. This is one of my favorite episodes. I'm a sucker for time travel.
Yeah,
first of all. And then this is just a very satisfying, well-done episode.
Well, so I've talked about how in other episodes, like, our mission is we're trying to combine, you know, the magic of the week with the character story. And in this episode, we're trying to combine the magic of the week with the character story with... So it's magic, but it's also the time travel. It's also the... There's so many pieces.
Yeah, the history of Gravity Falls, and all our characters younger.
And you've only got 21 minutes. And you've got these amazing set pieces, like the whole town playing laser tag. You've got a set piece like Globnar. You've got a set piece like we're going to Gravity Falls 10 years in the past. And each one of those could be a whole episode.
Yeah, no, totally.
And that was part of the hardest thing about it, right?
There were little challenges, too, where it's like, okay, so this show's taking place in, what, 2016, 2015?
Theoretically, 2012. It's taking place in a modernish time to when audiences are watching
right.
it. But if you rewind 10 years previous
to... It's like, what are the signifiers of that time? Like,
2005, 2003.
Yeah, like, how do you write those jokes? Like, AOL discs? We can't use corporate names.
AOL discs actually did come up.
Yeah. That was like, I guess that's how we define the year 2000 or whatever year this took place.
Little did we know, soon it would be aped in all of pop culture. We could have just put Dipper in a choker or something.
It was shockingly hard to figure out 10 years ago. It's not the 80s. It's not the 90s. It's not the 70s. Like, all of the pop culture jokes about what that era was don't exist yet.
Yeah.
Like, we got most of our humor not from any references to, like, what was going on in culture at that time, but, like, okay, rewind Gravity Falls
right.
10
yeah,
years
ago. What are the characters doing at that time? That was the key.
But it's still weird, and our artists had a huge challenge with it. Like, and I remember some of the designs, like... It wound up looking weirdly 80s or whatever, and I was just like, I don't have time to fix it. Sure.
Yeah.
Gravity Falls is sort of a timeless place, and we're going back in time in a timeless place to a time that's not very defined.
Maybe like early 2000s Oregon, you know, particularly in a rural area like Gravity Falls, like they were on a time delay.
Yeah,
so like
it's
all
closer.
Of the 80s trends were hitting in 2002.
Raz Dazzler could have come from no mind other than the mind of Jeff Rowe.
I just want to give a shout out to the Raz Dazzler. I think that's like my finest bit of writing on the show. Few things have made me more self-satisfied than
Where did the Raz Dazzler come from, Jeff?
I think I was just like, I was having a conversation one night and it was awkward and I was just like, Razzle Dazzle, it's me, the Raz Dazzler. And then I was like, ooh, that's gold. I should put that in an episode of the show.
Was that one of your like OK Cupid profile name submissions? Like
The Raz Dazzler.
We were trying to come up with like Jeff Rose, like what was his screen name gonna be for his dating profile? Yeah.
So Jeff and Shion shared an office on Gravity Falls, they experienced each other's personalities at maximum for a very long time.
No, it was great.
I don't know. know, guys. Maybe we should just leave him alone, you know?
No one should be alone on their birthday. There's gotta be a way to cheer him up. We just need to try harder.
You're right, Dipper.
There was also Stabby the Boss Cat.
Stabby the Boss Cat was what I wanted people to call me. And no one ever...
Was there a reason?
I just thought it was a fun combination of words. Like, I'm Stabby the Boss Cat. What's up? Pew, pew, pew. Stabby, Stabby.
So this is the first commentary we've had Jeff on. And now everybody who's listened to this point realizes like how much they've been missing out on.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I actually, we talked a little bit about at the beginning of season two, how Mike had been sort of this, like, the kind of, in many ways, like, just like the energetic lunatic of the show.
Yes.
And then he wasn't around for season two. And that, like, you were kind of his energetic lunatic protege, like, who he kind of brought in, like, guys, I got to leave. I got this crazy guy, Jeff. He likes to be called Stabby the Boss Cat. Figure it out.
The Gravity Falls writer's room, I think, is the only place I've ever felt accepted for my eccentric self, where I could just rap during meetings and say things like Stabby the Boss Cat. And
can
people...
and should are different words. You can rap.
Yeah.
I was...
Where he wasn't stopped from rapping.
Yeah, I was widely ignorant of people's opinions about the things I was doing.
Much to your benefit.
No, I'm just busting your chops. Jeff, like, wrote so many amazing jokes. Probably the fastest writer I've ever met in my entire life. Like, what you go into these, like, crazy writing fugue states where you can write an entire episode in, like, a day, which should be impossible. Like, so it makes sense that you're writing a time travel episode because that's an ability you have.
Well, thank you. That's a nice thing to say. That's, I mean, do
you didn't expect a nice thing to be said, did you, Jeff?
I thought it was going to be all razz-dazzle, but no, I mean... Do we tell them about the secret alternate version of this episode?
Sure, that's what this is for.
Because this was such a challenge, I remember I read one of the very first drafts of this script, and it was so funny, but it was one of these things where we were spending a lot of time during Globnar and a lot of time in laser tag, and we're trying to thread the needle of this emotional story, and there's so many pieces that need to fit together that I briefly thought, I think this is an impossible story. I think I gave you an impossible assignment, and I don't want you to see you hang yourself. Like, we need to figure out an episode that's simpler and makes sense. So we came up with a totally different story that involved... It was basically, the concept was Blendon's revenge. Blendon has come back. He wants to get revenge on the kids, but he screws up, sends them all together 10 years in the past, and that while they're 10 years in the past, they spend the whole episode working together to try to get back to the present, and Dipper and Mabel observe... It's sort of like Back to the Future. They screw up Seuss meeting Stan. And as a result, Seuss is never going to become a member of the Mystery Shack. They've got this thing that tracks the butterfly effect that shows Seuss's life, right?
Yeah,
they have to repair Seuss's future while also getting back to the present while also undoing this thing with Blendon. And Jeff, we came up with this story was as a group. We were just like, how about this instead?
Yeah.
Jeff, figure it out. And how quickly did you write a draft of that story, Jeff?
It was 48 hours, I think. It was like really, I mean, I had a rock solid outline. Like, you have the story structure all figured out and you gave me an outline. So really I was just like executing a blueprint, but it was like, didn't sleep for 48 hours, wrote it. We did a table draft read of it. And it was like this triumphant, like, we did it. We wrote an entirely new episode so quick. Oh man, we're heroes.
Not we, Jeff. Jeff's a hero. Jeff got like a standing ovation. And Josh Weinstein, who's like a classic Simpsons writer and knows comedy, like said sincerely, like, I've worked with so many amazing writers in my career. I don't know a single person who could have done this thing you did. Like, it was amazing.
People were very nice about it. And then cut to like two more weeks of like crying and heartbreak and just like, we're going back to the original episode and
well,
everything.
You wanted to go back to the original.
Yeah. I had this weird attachment to the personal character story in this, like the whole thing about like Seuss and his dad. And I was like, that's really meaty. We got to do that. And we got to make people cry. And it was like, I think I was like very short-sighted about it.
I mean, I don't think you were, because like looking back on that alternate story, it was clear and it was fun, but like this was really hard, so hard that I thought it was uncrackable, and that's why I suggested an alternate. But you felt that this had a greater opportunity for an emotional payoff. And I've seen so many people say online and in comments on Twitter, even in person one time at a convention, like say like that idea that you choose family, something you create over the course of your life. And that if that somebody earns being your family, you know, like that the Mystery Shack, these kids and Stan, they're Seuss's family, and that he's happy about that. Like, is like something like people can use, and like we never would have gotten there if we had done that other story.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
so I think your intuition, like, even though you were getting everyone saying like, let's do this other story, like pull back to this one. And like, we had back and forth, like you had a different ending. Like I wanted to do this ending. Like, so it was constantly a back and forth, back and forth.
I wrote, I know it was Alex, emotional. A very mean email at like 1 a.m. one night. I think this was like the height, you know, in retrospect, none of it was that dramatic or intense, but it was like, that was like the height of quote unquote drama on the show or something for me personally, where it's like, I was like,
well, and this was also like your first like writer's room gig.
Yeah. This
like,
was the
you
first
were like
thing.
Basically fresh out of school.
Yeah.
And like so talented and good, but also like dealing with these new pressures and like an impossible amount of things. And again, I'm throwing like, here's 10 random things that don't connect. Connect them somehow.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like really difficult. But like,
oh, I remember this joke. Yeah.
Wait, I was going to, no, go for it. Because I was going to actually bring up another joke in the alternate version that I really missed, actually, which is like when, I forget, was it like, Lolf sees his time clone murdered in front
of
him.
Oh, yeah.
His supervisor comes back and he's like, I'm so sorry for that. Take the rest of the day off.
Yeah. Like, there was this thing where it's like if some kind of time anomaly creates a time clone, which is like time fractures, and then there's an exact DNA replicant of you right next to you. And the only thing to do in that is to put a bag over the head of the replicant and murder them. Like, you just have to erase the alternate timeline. So it's like, yeah, the Lolf saw his essentially his twin get murdered.
Jeff would go to murder a lot for punchlines, which is the reason that Mabel's Guide to Smiles never saw the light of day.
We've talked
about that. That was probably the first thing you wrote for the show.
Yeah. good old murder joke Jeff, as they used to call me.
Well, I mean, but this is one of the reasons that, like, I was like, we need you on this show. I remember reading your writing test, and it's like a lot of people see their writing for kids at Kids Network, and they pull their punches.
Yeah.
And
I would
rather a writer come at me with really crazy, funny stuff that maybe we can't use all of it, and, like, I'll be the one to say, all right, I'll fight for this one will take out, than to have them pre-censor themselves before they arrive, you know?
Yeah.
There were a lot of good gags in that alternate version, but I do think I'm happy with how this one came out, Jeff. I know you're probably conflicted about it.
Oh no! I'm proud of it. At the end, I feel nothing but shame about all the conflict and stuff that went into it. I'm embarrassed and regretful.
None of that. Sweetheart.
I do want to let the people know the original alternate script is buried in a box somewhere in the state of Kansas. I'm gonna say a string of random numbers. It's a code. I invite you to go dig it up. Shovels. Go into people's 14, yards.
62, 37.
26, 5, 4,
Reagan,
7, 7,
Stevenson.
7.
The color yellow.
Do not do any of
don't
that.
Don't do that, please.
Don't waste your time.
It's a lie.
Never belong.
Or if you do, record it and put it on the internet.
This in earlier versions, I think in the storyboard, the card that Seuss is holding up from New Orleans actually said Vegas. And I, at the last minute, got really worried that people were going to see that and think that that was a clue that Stan was Seuss's deadbeat father.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And because, like, our audience, we've trained them to look for clues and to connect dots, and they start connecting dots that are not connected. And I called a late retake because, and I've seen some people be like, oh, wouldn't that be cool if Stan was actually Seuss's father? And I hate that headcanon.
Right.
Whoever's listening and you think that's a great idea, that's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Because it's a terrible idea, A, because it means that Stan ran out on his kid and then came back in his life and lied about it.
And weirdly pretends to not be his dad.
Yeah.
Like,
B,
it flies against the moral of this entire episode, which is like, you know, this guy who is Seuss's blood relative, like, cast him out and didn't come back and didn't make time for him. And all these people did. And, like, you know, like, these people are Seuss's real family. And, like, to say, oh, Stan would be Seuss's real father more if he was genetically, I'm like, nah. Forget that. Like, you know, like, relationships are about what you do, you know,
right.
They're
not about
who you
bloodline.
Are. Like, you know, to me, friendship is thicker than water, and family is something you can create. So I really didn't want anyone to think that we were suggesting that, because to me, it wasn't just the wrong idea. It was like thematically against what the show's about.
Well, and also going back to that alternate story, like that, the Back to the Future story is about losing something you have and regaining it. Whereas in this episode, I feel like Seuss gains something out of this episode. He gains the knowledge that, like, I'm tired of thinking about this man who I'm missing, who doesn't care about me. I'm going to concentrate on the people in front of me, the people that are my true family. And he has that realization at the end of this episode. So he gets something new out of this episode. Well, that he gets something added to his life.
Yeah, yeah.
One of my arguments, because I think our biggest argument was about the very ending.
Yeah,
it was about,
yeah,
like, how do we resolve Seuss's emotional problem? And, like, my, even though my concern about the ending that I did choose was that it might feel a bit like a Deus Ex Machina, like it's almost underwhelming. We've had time travel, we've had Globnar, and it's just Seuss deciding he doesn't want to see his dad. But to me, I thought, Seuss has been kind of infantilized by this whole story. Like, it's just him being sad and hiding from the world. And I wanted the final choice to be his, and I wanted it to be no one else's idea. Like, they're like, here's two options. He's like, I choose option three. I've grown out of this. Like, that was something that I wanted.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But, well, like, but there's sense. Also, it's not visual, you know, and, yeah, like, it doesn't use time travel. So, like, that's a fair criticism of it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, it's the correct ending. It works really well.
Here we go to pure Jeff.
Well, the, yeah.
Jeff had about 20 more pages of Globnar.
We had
jokes.
A whole script's worth of. Well, I mean, this is something where I've talked about how every episode we do a thing, the whiteboard thing, where everybody shouts out things and I draw on the whiteboard every idea we could possibly think of. And when we thought of gladiatorial time combat, it was the most fun.
Yeah.
And we came up
with
so many insane ideas. Remember Dos Hunthou, Jeff?
Yeah.
Jeff valiantly tried to incorporate every single idea we had and made it work.
I feel like that was my greatest skill as a writer, is that I had this like magnet brain that I'm just like, I can see a way that all of these ideas fit together and like, let's just get it all.
Like, and I have a wrecking ball brain. I'm like, I see a way that these things fitting together don't fit together. Dos Hunthou, a little background on that character. That was just like a Jeff way of saying $200,000.
It's like, I want to make a hunthou. You know what? I want Dos Hunthou.
And then I was like, that sounds like the name of a Star Wars character. And then we were like, what if Dos Hunthou is this amazing bounty hunter from the future who's got a time gun that can make you a baby or make you an old man? And so there was like probably 15 pages of them fighting Dos Hunthou.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and hey, Dos Hunthou, some jokes never die. Like, Dos Hunthou found his way into the book, the Choose Your...
Oh, that's right.
Pick Your Own Choose Venture.
Jeff also wrote the Pick Your Own Choose Venture. So Dos Hunthou lives again in book form.
Yeah.
This used to be so long, and we had to cut everything. If you're looking for the maximum range of my vocal abilities, listen to me scream the word Globnar right now.
This was Chris Howden.
Chris
Howden all this.
Boarded this. I enjoy the detail on the fact that the Cyclops has a big hand and a little hand. Mm-hmm. That's a really weird clock joke that I don't think anybody got.
I just discovered that right now. That's new to me. It was like 3 months ago that I figured out that the name Gravity Falls was itself a pun.
It's sort of a pun.
Yeah.
It's not really a pun. I kind of hate the name Gravity Falls.
It's a great name. You're a fool to hate it. Let's talk about Time Baby. Time Baby was one of a million, well, not a million, about 10 time characters we came up with for the first time travel episode. What were there was like a...
Yeah, there was like a time duck and a time ox and
there was like all these weird time characters.
We talked about like a paradox that was half parrot and half ox. It was like a creature that was created through time travel.
It was like Blenden was going to be judged by a jury maybe, and they were all going to be on the jury. And then Time Baby kind of became the top dog, so to speak, and he became the judge.
Yeah, some ideas we love because they're clever, some ideas we love because they're just dumb, and Time Baby is one of those
time
ideas.
Time Baby,
like,
is a great
dumb. The moment
dumb,
somebody's
great
uttered the
idea.
Phrase Time Baby, you can never forget it, and you want to put it in the series. Graham Linehan, the creator of IT Crowd and Father Ted, just this really amazing, well-known Irish screenwriter, he loves this show, and in particular, he loves Time Baby. Like, when this episode aired, he, like, wrote me being like, if you guys do a Time Baby spinoff, can I write on this? Like,
that's amazing.
I was like, I don't know why, but people across the pond think Time Baby's amazing. Some British humor thing.
One of the best jokes, I think, was a Tim McKeown joke back, because he was there for the brainstorm session at the beginning of season two, and then he left to go do his PBS show. And he had this thing about Time Baby, like... the guards having to feed Time Baby, like, Time Baby, we're going to feed you. And like,
oh, yeah.
And it was just like, that made me laugh so much. I think that was one of those like tent pole.
You
got
to keep it in. Yeah.
That
makes a lot of sense because you adopted that in your repertoire of like communication noises after that.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'd be like, Jeffy, go, oh.
Yeah. That's 90% of the way I speak to humans.
A lot of weird rapping and baby talk coming out of Jeff in the writer's room.
Yeah.
Jeff, you want to give us a little bit of your vocal heat?
Oh no!
Jeff was rapping nonstop until we turned on the mics, and now he's like, "Oh no!"
Yeah.
No, don't want
it. Oh, you can't handle my ciphers.
I was laser tag was something that I always did want to see in the show, and it ends up being a very small part of this episode. I just remember as a kid, it's a very dated way for kids to enjoy an afternoon is to strap on these weird, uncomfortable plastic vests, watch a really bad video about the future, go in, they play Ace of Base, they got a fog machine. There's usually some like obnoxious older guy who plays it every day and can beat everybody.
Yeah. Well, that was part of the fun of this show is like, not only did we get to engage with fun, paranormal, monster stuff, we also got to just dig into like our 90s nostalgia, like weird childhood.
Yeah, like look at that carpet, so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, give us the most 90s carpet was something we would ask the artists a lot.
Oh, and there's like weird things too that I look back and I'm just like, oh, we needed it to be a mattress store, so the laser tag place is built out of mattresses, and it's like, that's a crazy decision. I'm just looking at all the mattresses in the background.
Well, it makes for a safe environment.
I think the idea was we want to show. First, it was just we want to show change from now to only 10 years ago. It's not that different. So it's like, okay, the laser tag place was what's a funny thing to say just so that when they snap back, there's an instant clear change. And then somebody just shout out mattress store. And then we're like, okay, then maybe there's a gag about how it's like poorly made, which fits in with the idea of mattresses. And then maybe we could use that. And they land on the mattresses when they time travel. And like it's what we're just everything. We're trying to click together things to make them make sense. This was a very late tag. This
but
idea
it's
that
great addition.
It sort of suggests because the whole that alternate script that we didn't end up producing was basically like a whole episode out of this area.
This idea
of what was this time like, and we loved that so much we wanted to see a little glimpse of it. So we got like a little taste of this just before the episode ended. Hey, Gumdrop, you're hired.
Well, this is indulging the fans in the best sense of the word, like giving them just a little snippet of like. Here's us who's got hired.